Hello and welcome into another edition of Road Trip in ATL with Kent Bazemore and Mike Muscala. I'm your host, Annie Finberg, and with us today is our guest, the OG, Zeke Isaiah Thomas.
How are you?
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Isaiah. Pleasure.
Thank you.
It's an honor.
I'm honored to be on the show, and thanks for inviting me.
Isaiah, I don't know if you remember, but I met you recently and when John Collins came on the starters, and we were in that little room.
Okay, yeah,
I'm sure you remember
some good conversation back there. Yeah,
with Dominique. But no, it was an honor to meet you then. I was really excited. I like had to text all my friends and let them know that I met you, so that was exciting, and we're glad to have you on the show. Baze, how are you feeling over there?
A little sore, but you know, part of the process.
Trust the process.
Yeah. I heard it was. KK said it was good news though. It wasn't anything.
Yeah.
That's good.
Not too serious. Cool.
Well, we are all praying for your health.
Yeah, so I appreciate it, man.
Get healthy, my brother.
Yes, sir. Just Definitely. Another notch in the belt.
Yep.
Definitely. Real quick before we dive in, I want to talk about Mr. Muscala here. Had a career high 19 points last night. Baze, I know you went out early, but did you see your boy ball out?
Yeah, man. A couple of guys filled it up. Muskie, some clutch threes down the stretch, and then TP was just went off.
Yeah, TP was the real story.
And amazing. Yeah, he had an amazing stat line. So that's what happens, man. You get a couple guys out, a couple guys sit down, and the rest of our guys, they put in the work all season, get a chance to blossom. So it's all good stuff for the future.
Yeah.
No,
well, I think he was a shortstop, played for the New York Yankees by the name of Wally Pipp. And he got hurt. And there was a gentleman that replaced him. And I don't think he missed a game after that. And Wally Pipp never got his spot back. So, Baze, I'm just letting you know that. But look up the name Wally Pipp, and you'll see who was the gentleman that replaced him for the Yankees. He ended up in the Hall of Fame.
Dang. I gotta look that up now. Okay.
Yeah, they call him the Iron Man. I don't think he missed a game after that because he didn't want to give up his spot. So,
yeah.
Just saying, Baze, get well soon, my brother.
So I do want to talk about, before we talk about your greatness and everything you've done, Isaiah, I'm sure you saw Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan recently came out with some articles about mental health and just things that they had been struggling with, and which I thought was absolutely amazing for them to come out on such a large platform as, you know, these guys that everyone looks up to. I wanted to get all three of you guys your opinion on those articles and kind of what it means just to, you know, our culture, but also to the NBA for those guys to be stepping up and talking about their struggles.
Well, myself personally, I thought it was great that, particularly for African-American men, to come out and have these kind of conversations. DeMar, coming from California, being the first to really, step out on the platform. And then Kevin Love, also following. I think when you have, men discussing these issues, particularly, I can only speak from my past experience in terms of growing up in poverty and, dealing with, post-traumatic stress and depression and everything else that comes along with poverty, being able to talk about these issues now and bring them to light and not have the fear of being judged in such a harsh way, all respect for Love and DeRozan for, stepping up and standing out.
Yeah.
Baze, what'd you think about them?
I think it's cool because, it's what we face every day. It's an extra, part of this job is, managing your well-being. A lot of people have families, and, just traveling and just the pressure of playing every night, and, expectation. There's just so much that goes into, being a professional athlete. And, from the outside looking in, when I was growing up watching it, I mean, you didn't even think that, these people, you know, that we went through this kind of stuff. You look at professional athletes as like superheroes. So to see those guys come out, you know, really, you know, makes me feel a lot better, because, you know, we've all struggled with it. We've all hit our, you know, dark points in playing in this league. So that just, you know, really, you know, solidifies the brotherhood that we have, that we kind of have something else to kind of, you know, cling to and be on the same page with, you know, outside of sports and outside of, you know, the good life, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. And I think anytime the fans have a chance to relate, you know, to players on any level, I think is a good connection to build and to keep building. So the fact that they were, you know, open and honest with their struggles, you know, in this particular sense with mental health, I think is very enlightening and a good bridge to continue to build.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So let's just dive in. I want to talk about the Bad Boys, Isaiah. Obviously, one of the baddest teams out there. I'm wondering, do you think the Bad Boys, any team could beat the Bad Boys today? Any current team?
She's going right for it.
No, I
would say the way the game is played right now, you know, actually our team is set up perfectly to play in this era. I would say the one guy that would, you know, would give us tremendous problems right now would probably be Kevin Durant. We wouldn't really have a matchup for KD. You know, although Sally and Rodman were very athletic, his ball handling skills out on the perimeter would give him a really huge advantage against Rodman and Sally. But I think, you know, we actually was the first team in our era to win playing pick and roll basketball and playing three guards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
So myself, Joe Dumars, Vinny Johnson, I think we would have a lot of success in this era. I think Bill Laimbeer as a 3-point shooting center and rebounder would have great success in this era. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Rodman and Sally and, you know, and Aguirre and everyone else could play in this era. So I think we would win a lot of games. I think defensively, we would be, you know, just as good. And offensively, we would probably even be better. I think we would have we definitely would enjoy playing in this era probably more than we did in the other era where everybody kind of, you know, beat the crap out of each other. I know I would enjoy it more. I know I wouldn't take as much abuse getting to the basket now as I did back then. I think our team was tailor-made for this era of basketball.
Yeah. So
now we got two guys on the phone that actually play in this era. So if you guys want to, you know, chime in and, you know, disagree or agree, or, you know, you can definitely debate it.
Nah, you know, first of all, we all, you know, pay homage, you know, to start with. So, you know, we appreciate you guys kind of paving the way, you know, and making this game a lot better. But that's, you know, now here you talk about your old team, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I just want to know how it was to kind of, you know, I've obviously watched the documentaries, but how was it to walk in an arena and, you know, kind of instill fear in the other team? Like, you know, like, I mean, no layups, and you saying Kevin Durant, you know, would be our biggest problem. You know, he thrives in, you know, the mid-range area, shooting threes and stuff, and obviously he can get to the rim. So, you know, that would probably take away you guys', you know, physical tactic. We're trying to rough him up. So talk about how it was to, you know, actually, you know, be feared on a nightly basis.
So I'll start off by acknowledging and saying thank you for, you know, saying that we paved the way, but I must say to you on the phone that what y'all are doing with the game and where y'all have taken it to and where it's got a chance to go, you know, has far exceeded any of our expectations. So thank you guys for being as professional and as good as you've been within the game to continue to allow all of us to make a living off the game.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Thank you for keeping the Golden Goose going.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, there's a narrative out there about our physicality in terms of, you know, no layups, so forth and so on. But if you think about it, Baze, I mean, that's every coach's rule. Mm-hmm. You know, from grade school to high school, you didn't want anybody getting to the basket. You know, you wanted to protect the rim. And if they were poor foul shooters, right, we've been taught our whole career, right, you know, foul them, send them to the foul line, and he splits as opposed to giving up 2 points. You give up one, and there's a possibility he, you know, misses both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when, unfortunately, or for us, you know, being in Detroit, we were a small media market team. And the media market teams that we were facing in terms of Chicago, Boston, Los Angeles, they had the boom mics. They had a bigger voice than we did. So their narrative really carried today in terms of our physicality.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, we were no more physical than any other team that was playing.
Mm.
Now, and I can sit on the phone and say, you know, emphatically that I took more physical punishment than Michael Jordan did. Okay. You know, you can go back and you can look at the film and you can actually see who got hit harder and who bled more. So the narrative about, you know, our team, you know, being so physical, that was the times. That's how everyone played. And you guys grew up, you know, I'm sure playing the same way. Now, when you got to the NBA, the rules had changed a little bit and it was a little softer. Right. But I'm sure you were much more physical in college than you are in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, no question.
That's just keeping it 100.
Right.
Yeah, no question. In terms of putting fear in the opponents, our job was to come in and stop you from scoring. We were, you know, early in my career, we were known as a high-powered offensive machine, and we still hold the record today for the most points ever scored in a game at 186. And then, you know, as we figured out, it's like, okay, I didn't have, you know, top 50 players playing with me. I think I'm the only player that's ever won a championship that didn't have a top 50 player playing alongside of him. Mm-hmm. Everyone else had two or three playing alongside of them. We decided that the only way that we were going to win games is not by outscoring people, but shutting them down. So how do we become a great defensive team? And I just went back to my old days of I played for Coach Knight at Indiana. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, we were one of the top ranked defensive teams ever to play the game. Every game that we won in the NCAA tournament, we won by double digits. I don't know if there's ever been another team that's done that since. And in high school, my high school team was one of the top defensive teams. And when I got into the NBA, that's where we planted our flag on the defensive side of the ball. And we stopped people from scoring. Mm. And we took pleasure in that. And as you see in our game today, the offense gets all the credit. They give the, you know, all the pretty adjectives in description are about offense. Mm-hmm. You know, offense is beautiful. Defense is ugly. Defense is tough. Defense is this. So, you know, being rooted in defense, we got all the negative adjectives. And when we had to stop the pretty teams, right? You know, L.A. was beautiful. Boston was beautiful. Chicago was beautiful. Well, Detroit, in terms of the narrative and the labeling theory that they gave us, the labels that they put on us was, you know, was all dirty. And we didn't have enough media boom mic to fight the other big three media markets.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's when you were describing how you you know, felt like you guys were set up perfectly for today's NBA with you know, the pick and roll offense and pick and pop and the first, you know, team to do that to win. I mean, that was news to me. I didn't even know that. So it's interesting to hear that. You know, you felt like from a smaller media market that maybe you were I would have mislabeled be too far to say in terms of like the legacy that you guys had.
Well, we were the first San Antonio. Mm-hmm. You know, when you look at small market teams during that period of time, you know, we really were the first model. And what San Antonio is today in terms of being a small market, being able to dominate in the sport against the bigger markets, Detroit, you know, we really laid the foundation. And in terms of, you know, I think the second part of your question, were we mislabeled?
Yeah.
We definitely were. And if you go back and you read some of my quotes, I did talk about labeling theory. You know, in college, you learn, you're really talking about, you're being taught in college about race, class, and gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that when you came into the NBA and you got the mic put in front of you, the thing that you can't talk about is race, class, and gender.
Yeah.
But, you know, so the labels that they were given that were being put on us, some of them were, I said it then, and I, you know, they were the stereotypes in terms of us as a team, in terms of who we were as players, as men. Some of them were very racialized language that they put around our team. And also the way we played was very racialized language that they put around our team. The type of men that we were far from thugs or thuggish. Nothing that we did out on the floor, you know, required those kind of labels. Again, we played just as tough as Boston did and just as tough as LA did and Chicago did.
Yeah.
Now those teams, they were, at that time they were the royal family.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. And then what happened after Magic, after we beat Magic, after we beat Bird, you know, Jordan was coming along and, you know, he was a phenom like we had never seen. And there was an opportunity for him to take the league to a totally different level, which he did, partnering with Nike and NBC at the time. And what they did to our game and the levels that they took it to, you know, we as the Detroit Pistons, we couldn't have taken it to that level. Jordan definitely took our game to another level and made it possible again for all of us to, you know, still be on the phone and protecting the Golden Goose. So it was definitely the right decision to, you know, give him to pass the torch on to him. But in between all of that, you know, there was a team. And I guess you can say we're very similar to San Antonio right now, because there's, as much as we talk about, you know, LeBron James, you know, there was a guy by the name of Tim Duncan who won a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And San Antonio has won a lot. But the glamour teams now we're talking about, you know, we're talking about Durant, we're talking about LeBron. And LeBron has, you know, been to 7 NBA finals, I think has a chance to go to 8. And correct me if I'm wrong. But, you know, in his reign, so to speak, Tim Duncan in San Antonio was having their way with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think you guys, that Detroit team should be, like I said, like I gave you appreciation for helping the game, because there's a myth or a story that after Jordan faced you guys, he went and, you know, put on some weight and got so much tougher, and you know, it was all thanks to you guys. So can you talk about the difference that you saw in him from I'm not sure what year it was, but there was a year you beat the crap out of him, and then he came back, you know, this totally different body, totally different player, and, you know, that's where I think he kind of took off.
I would say you know, strategically, you know, and mentally, we were tougher, and we were a lot smarter than their teams were. We were students of the Celtics. The Boston Celtics were our mentors. They taught us how to win. So everything that Boston was and did, we emulated, we copied. I spent days, weeks, months studying, talking, you know, with Mikhail, with Dennis Johnson, with Bird, with Casey Jones, Red Auerbach, you know, spent time with me. So we were really students of the game in terms of how to win championships. And everything that the Celtics put on us mentally and strategically,
yeah,
we put on Chicago. And, you know, there was a, you know, 30 for 30 did a great film on the Celtics Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
You gotta
watch the 30 for 30 Celtics Lakers.
Okay.
Because what you will see is the Detroit Pistons. You know,
all right.
I mean, you know, ML Carr, you know, Maxwell. I mean, you know, those are the guys that we learned from. Those are the guys who taught us. And after they would beat us, then they would teach us. So everything that, you know, we learned from Boston strategically, and what most people don't understand about our game, it is mental warfare. When you're out on the floor, you know, I'm trying to capitalize on every mistake you make, whether it be physically or mentally. And my job is to wear you down mentally if I can't beat you physically. I wasn't bigger or stronger or faster than Jordan, Bird, or Magic. I couldn't jump as high. So I just tried to eliminate all the physicality out of the game and make it a mental chess match. And just like you sit in the classroom, some guys can't sit in the classroom and concentrate for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And then there are some guys that can. And we know the last 5 minutes of the game, there's physical fatigue and there's mental fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to exhaust them mentally.
Yeah.
So Jordan didn't go back and get stronger physically. That's a great narrative to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan went back and he and his team, they got stronger mentally.
Yeah.
They were able to concentrate longer. They didn't make the mistakes. Okay.
Mm.
They kept their cool. They didn't get razzled. They didn't get frazzled. You know, we would run one play and we would run it like 12 times in a row because they couldn't stop it.
Wow.
And then when you tell them we're getting ready to run it, every time they made a mistake on it, right? You capitalize on the mistake and you just frustrate them. Mm-hmm. That's a mental wearing down, right? And you find the weak link in the chain of the team, whoever you're playing against. There's always five people out on the floor playing. Okay, well, one of them, if that person is mentally weak, if he stayed out the night before, okay, if he wasn't in shape, then that's who we're targeting. And we're gonna beat you down for 48 minutes until your teammates get mad at you. And when your teammates get mad at you, they're going to make a substitution, and we got a lesser player coming in. And guess what? We're going to take advantage of him, too.
Yeah.
Man. Wow. Andy, we might need to cut that part out. You might need to say that for us.
Can't let the outside world hear that. Isaiah, obviously a friend of the Hawks and of the podcast is Dominique Wilkins. He's come on the pod, and obviously he does our broadcast and works a lot with our team. You guys played during the same era. Talk to us about just facing Neek and, you know, the teams he was on, and tell us some dirty stuff about Neek, because we only see this bright, shiny side of him. So tell us some good stuff.
I tell you good stuff. The good stuff, you know, and all the stuff that we've been talking about, I mean, Atlanta, you know, they had one of the strongest teams in that era. Unfortunately, we were all, you know, good physically, and we were all good mentally. I mean, Milwaukee, Atlanta, Boston, Philadelphia, us, we were all competing against each other. And when I say Milwaukee, think about this. So Philadelphia would win 62 games. Milwaukee would win 61 games, and Boston would win 60 games, and that's how crazy the East was back then. And Dominique, just like myself, we were trying to break through, you know, the Bostons and the Philadelphias and Detroit and Atlanta. We were on the same path, and every year. you know, we were either knocking each other out of the playoffs or beating the other. And, you know, it was just a matter. I think Atlanta, that great series that Dominique had with Bird, where they were going back and forth, if you remember that series, where they show a lot on television. Well, I'll never forget, they won game five. Atlanta won game five in Boston. They're coming back home to close out game six in Atlanta. In the first play of the game, and I'm sitting at home in Detroit, and I'm watching this because I'm thinking that we're getting ready to play Atlanta because Atlanta's going to close out. And Boston has been all teachers, right? Mm-hmm. So series 3-2, Atlanta's up 3-2, and they're at home. The first play of the game on the tip, Parrish tips it to Ainge. Ainge comes down, pulls up from the top of the three-point line at the top of the key, top of the circle. Bam. 3-0. That was the first play of the game. I called Dumars. I said, well, I think this is going to go seven. But that's how mentally tough Boston was. Now, I know you guys have been in your playoff moments, and imagine you're in a closeout game on the road. And, you know, now it's not a big deal for someone to just raise up and shoot a three. Back then, that was a big statement. Yeah. You know, and anyway, Boston went on to win the series. But, you know, Dominique was, you know, he was great, and all he needed was a little luck. And, you know, the off the court story that I got to tell, I don't think people know about him. Dominique was a great dancer. Great dancer. When I say great, I mean like Bobby Brown type. Okay. Neek was shit. I mean, you know, when we danced back then, we weren't cool like y'all cool now. We would get out on the floor and we would sweat. We would have to work out.
That's how it should be done.
You know, we would sweat our clothes out. You know, we had a little rag wiping our face off. And our music was like, you know, we was trying to kill it. We was like in the second workout here. But Neek could really dance, and we used to love to watch him dance. That was the thing that we. So that's my little off the court secret about.
That's awesome.
About Dominique.
Wow.
We'll have to ask him to dance for us next time.
That's funny.
I'm sweating his Jerry Curl out.
Too funny.
So Isaiah, I kind of want to get into a little bit about and if we can talk however little or much about this as you want, but the video that you did with Magic on NBA TV, you know, your reconciliation video obviously tugged at everyone's heartstrings just to see you guys both cry and hug. And how was that for you, just to, you know, not only to, you know, reconcile your one of your best friends, but do it in front of the world, the country, and just, you know, decide to put that all aside just for y'all's friendship?
You know, it wasn't planned that way. You know, we hadn't really been in each other's presence, you know, face to face without a third party being around, you know, for some years. And I would say the best thing that I learned, and I hope everyone learned, is that eliminate the third party. Eliminate the person that's whispering in the other person's ear or in your ear, keeping you two divided. And we had a third party that, you know, really had kept us divided, and, you know, it spread some pretty nasty rumors. And, you know, Lon Rosen was not kind. And once Irvin and I got face to face, you can see that it was just all love. And it was all good. And we really missed each other in terms of the friendship, the love, the bond that we had, the memories that we had and that we shared. And before you knew it, you know, we were supposed to be talking about Lonzo Ball and Lakers and everything else. And it just turned into, man, how you been? What's going on? I love you. I missed you. And we just went there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then going there, it was like, you know, I don't think either one of us wanted to cry, but the emotions were so strong. It was like,
yeah,
you just let it out.
And, yeah.
And I, in all honesty, I was trying to get the producers to cut the crying scene out. I was like, come on, man, you know, I make a lot of money on this bad boy stuff. you know, I can't be crying on television like this. No, but it was a beautiful moment. And, you know, our families are glad that, you know, at least he and I are, you know, speaking again. You know, we had dinner at the All-Star game. So it's all good. And, you know, again, I say to, you know, so many people, you know, get the third party out and sit down face to face and talk. I had this one woman, she was 70 years old. I was coming through the Atlanta airport and she stopped me and she said she saw the interview. And she said she hadn't talked to her college roommate, you know, in years. Something happened between them in college. And she said after watching the interview, she picked up the phone, called her old college roommate, and now they're speaking again. Wow. So we didn't intend for it to be that powerful of a moment for everyone else, but I'm glad it turned out that way.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It goes back to just... I mean, being able to share moments like that and being able to connect with fans and people who look up to you especially and other athletes like we were talking about earlier with, you know, Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan talking about, you know, their mental health struggles. So I think that's really cool that that scene was left in there and that it kind of happened organically like that it wasn't even planned.
I didn't even realize that it wasn't a planned conversation. So
yeah, wow, cool.
No, as you can see, I didn't have no notes. Again, we were supposed to be talking about the Lakers in his new job.
Yeah. Wow.
So Isaiah, you have been a player, a coach, a GM. How would you rank those three roles? Which one was your favorite and how did you decide to kind of, you know, leave that and go into broadcast?
My first entry into management. I was part owner, VP basketball operations of the Toronto Raptors, and I left Detroit to start the Raptors. And there was two international teams that this is when the NBA and it's still talking about being a global league. But their first entree was into Canada. They put a team in Vancouver and they put a team in Toronto. And John Batov and I were running a Toronto franchise and laid a good foundation in Toronto, left Toronto and actually started out at NBC on a broadcast and I was doing the game of the week with Bob Costas and Doug Collins. I actually called Jordan's last shot, the one that he pushed off against Russell and made the shot. I said that should have been an offensive foul, but now it's a move in the NBA where the offensive player really gets to push off every time. Mm-hmm. And I know I got two NBA players on the phone right now, and I'm just telling y'all, that's an offensive foul. You shouldn't be able to push a guy, and they call it a move, okay?
Exactly.
But now, exactly. You know, Kyrie and everybody else gets away with pushing people.
Yeah.
And that should be an offensive foul. And then I left, actually after, while I was at NBC, I bought the CBA. And when I bought the CBA, I turned it into basically what is, you know, known as the Development League now. I owned the whole league and the NBA wanted to get into the business. I had a big fight with the NBA and, well, you can see who won. the NBA had much deeper pockets than I did. They basically took the business plan that I had. And now they have the D League, what you call now, or the G League. went back into coaching, had an Indiana team that I thought was, you know, ready to win the championship. During that summer, I was actually with Popovich and Larry Brown with the Pan Am team in Puerto Rico. And Larry Bird got hired. And Larry Bird, I've never got fired, so this was the coolest firing I've ever had. So Larry calls me back, and I'm trying to convince him. I'm like, hey, I know we've had our battles, but, you know, I think you and I can work together. And he goes, nah. He goes, you know, I really like you, but I just like Rick Carlisle better. You know, I play with him. I know him. And so I'm just going to go with Rick. Mm. And I was like, damn. All right. You know, and that was it. So Rick ended up, you know, taking the Pacers, and I left. But, you know, so the broadcasting, to answer the broadcasting question is, you know, I started with NBC. Now I'm with NBA TV, Turner, TNT. So I've dibbled and dabbed in it a lot throughout my career, just as you guys are now. And I would encourage you to keep doing this, because when you're done playing, if you can talk about the game that you love and, you know, share it with others, it's a great way to give back.
Definitely. Isaiah, speaking about, you know, you mentioned earlier about the offensive push-offs and the fouls. I was going to ask, do you feel like the rules changes that the NBA has made to allow for more freedom of movement and, you know, with the faster play, I guess, do you think ultimately that's good for the league and for entertainment purposes? Or do you feel like, especially when you're talking about how defensive-minded you guys were and how important that was, you know, for your success in the championships you won, I mean, do you feel like that now it's kind of gotten a little bit out of hand in terms of how much offensive players can do?
Well, I'll go back to the, you know, that's a great question. And so I'll go back to the origin of the rule. The origin of the rule came in for Michael Jordan. You know, no hand check in, you know, no hard foul, so forth and so on. And I remember, I do remember, you know, Bird, you know, Magic, Kareem, myself, Mikhail, we were all saying at the rule competition committee, it's like, hey, he's good enough. He doesn't need any more help.
Right. Right.
But, you know, there was, you know, and we had all gotten beaten up. So we were like, you know, let him take a little, you know, let him take an ass whooping too.
Yeah, right.
But at the end of the day, I think it definitely was the right thing to do for the league in terms of freedom of play. Because when Riley went to the Knicks, you know, they just took it to a whole nother level in the 90s. They were far more physical than anything that we were in the 80s. And there definitely need to be some rule changes. And I think the rule changes definitely occurred around, you know, Riley's team with Mason and Oakley and Ewing more so than it did our team. Now, where it's at today, you know, the pendulum has swung so far towards the offense. The offense has major advantages now. Again, you can travel with the basketball. You can offensive foul as an offensive player. You can push off. You can carry the ball. You can do so much stuff now offensively that's not called.
Yeah.
That really puts the defense at just a total disadvantage. And again, I'm talking to both of you here on the phone. You were allowed to be more physical on the ball in college, and you are more physical on the ball in the summer than you can be in an NBA game.
Yeah, no question.
Agree. I just think that, you know, in order to make the game much more competitive again, you got to get a defense a chance to really compete against the offense. And, you know, then the best man wins. But right now, the offense has such an advantage that it, you know, it's just really not fair to the defense every single night that you can't you can't really get into your man and guard him. Now, if he's got all these, everybody's got great dribble moves when you can't touch him.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if I can get in your dribble space, okay, well then let me see how good your dribble moves really are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because they got the whole, so if you guarding a guy on the side, like James Harden's really good at it, that little swipe through thing where he just, you know, either gets free throws or gets a foul. Like if you got your hand, you know, just if you're in the space, you got your hand out a little bit, trying to take away his space, and he swipes up, you know, it's a foul on you. Yeah. I mean, it's so bizarre.
It's an unnatural movement.
I think the offense has way too much of an advantage. Now, it's great for the video game. It's great for the fantasy players and everything else. But they're, you know, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, defending and guarding people, we all know there's more to it than stealing the basketball and blocking the shot that you get done for on the defensive side of the ball. But that seems to be the only two things that they want to give you credit for in terms of defending.
Yeah,
but we know it takes a lot more than that.
Yeah, definitely.
Isaiah, I got two more questions for you, and then we'll go ahead and close.
Okay.
My first question for you is, and these are unrelated, but if you could face anyone in today's game, it could be a point guard, could be someone else. I know you said KD would obviously give you guys a lot of issues. Who would that be? And then my second question is, March Madness starts this weekend. Who do you have winning the national championship?
I don't know if you had a chance to watch me play, but the guys that I play now, I had fights with bigger guys because they would hit me, and of course I would hit them back. But I didn't have fights with guys my size, you know. So the people that I played against, we all got along. The one person I would hate to play against now is Kyrie Irving. Because he has the stuff that will embarrass you. You know, he's got all the dribble moves, and then he's got the trick stuff with it too. So like he can really like, make your friends talk about you after the game. So it's like, Curry, Harden, them guys will get like 30, they'll get 40 on you. But, you know, Kyrie will put a move on you, like it'll be on YouTube for like the next 10 years. Like people, that'll be the move that they go back and get. So I would hate to have to guard Kyrie in today's game.
Yeah,
because even if you crowd him, like he's just good with his hands. Like he got me with a move. I was pretty much sticking him, and he went between his legs and kind of grabbed one of my legs, so I couldn't move, and spun off me, and I was like, good God.
Yeah, he
got some stuff.
Yeah, I would not. I mean, he's the one guy that I would be like, man, I don't want no parts of this cat tonight.
Yeah, he got some stuff, boy.
Especially once he gets going, gets in his zone, he takes some tough, tough shots. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, you know.
But then he would have to guard me too, though.
I would have
to come back a little bit. But, you know, it would be fun to watch.
Yeah, that definitely.
Sure. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, Isaiah, who do you have NCAA tournament? Seedings just came out yesterday.
I got Michigan State winning it all.
Oh, well, Bucknell's going to beat them in the first round. That's where I went. So
I know you hoping that. You know, and they probably got a good 8 minutes in them.
And
you should hope that it's a good 8 minutes at the end of the game and not at the start of the game.
Yeah.
I just think Michigan State, I've watched them struggle down the stretch where they just haven't been as good as advertised. And I think they're about ready to break through their struggle. Michigan is playing extremely well. I see an all Big Ten final, Michigan against Michigan State.
Wow.
Oh, really?
I got Michigan State winning.
So that means you have Michigan State beating Kansas. Is that right? I went to Kansas,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Baze, what seed is Old Dominion this year?
Oh.
Yeah, we got snubbed, bro. 25-7.
Y'all in the CBI?
25-7. No, yeah, we ain't even getting the NIT.
Oh, man. It's tough.
Yeah, man. So it's tough being, you know, small school, man. It's
yeah.
Tough.
Shout out to your boys, Bucknell.
Sorry out here.
Yeah.
You pretty excited?
I mean, I got to pick them for sure.
You got the upset?
I mean, if I don't, yeah. I mean, if I don't, it's like, what am I doing?
Great.
You know?
I got UVA, man. I got UVA.
UVA, they legit. I got them in the Final Four.
They got size. They got they can shoot. They good. I watched them in the ACC championship game. They can play.
Yeah. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I have Kansas winning. All right. Well, Isaiah, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking time to give us a call and chat, talk basketball. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of Road Trip in ATL. Don't forget to subscribe, give us a shout out on social media, and we'll talk to you next time.